Bonjour, bonsoir, dear friends. Welcome to JCB Live. I have the pleasure, the honor to be next to one of the king of soap opera. Most of you already recognize him. All the ladies are already calling here at Raymond Vineyards because they know he's on the property and it's amazing. So he's done a lot of incredible shows. He's a fabulous wine taster and a great singer. So I hope the JCB Bubbles will tempt him to give us a few notes.
Oh,
he is as well a double nationality, and he will tell us all about that, how it is to come to the United States and succeed to this level. He was on 90210 and how many others? 40 years of soap opera. Emmy winner. Here is Vincent Erazzi. Are you really worried?
I guess that's the French version of Irizarry. Just so we're clear here. Okay, and which is actually a Basque name, so he should know how to say that, but that's okay.
Wanted to hear it from you.
Okay, santé.
So you told me you were having a bad hair day, but that looks pretty good to me.
I know, I was asking if we could have a fan blow my hair over here, because it is. I just woke up today and I was like, oh, this is just not working today.
You got to tell us,
cheers.
How is it to have made 40 years, you started at 5 years old.
No.
So many unbelievable movies and shows and day soap opera.
Yeah, I mean, I've been acting for over 40 years and I started in theater for 6 years. And then my first television job was a 3-day job on Guiding Light, which turned into a contract and turned into a career, frankly, because the character just exploded and took off. And it was supposed to only be 3 days.
And how did you get that job? Did you know you wanted to be an actor, or someone in the street said, he looks good, I wanted him on the
show?
Yeah,
I was already working in theater for about 6 years.
Yeah.
And I actually spent some time living in a theater in the in Greenwich Village. I slept on the floor of a dressing room for 6 months. And I was running lights for that theater at the time. And when I was there, I was doing other plays. I was doing a play called Indian Wants the Bronx, and a teacher, Elaine Aiken, who was a professional teacher at the Strasberg Institute, Lee Strasberg, who's a very famous teacher, she was working there and she saw me and she invited me into her professional class. She saw me doing the play, and when I went there to work in her class, because you had to be invited to it, I got a scholarship with Lee Strasberg at the time and his wife, Anna Strasberg.
So she fell in love. She was sudden impact of your skills.
Well, she didn't share that with me, but I would be, I'm assuming since she invited me to the class, but it worked out great. And I literally, because when Lee Strasberg was teaching, this is back in 1981, 82.
Yes.
So to study with him, it was $1,000 for 3 months. And I was 21 years old and I was sleeping on a dressing room floor in New York City. And I said, I can't pay for that. She was like, you have to stay with Lee. And they had Anna, his wife, come and see me do some scenes in our class. Mm-hmm. And they offered me a full scholarship with Lee at that time.
Fantastic.
And then Lee and Anna got me my first agents that I was with for 9 years, my professional agents.
So how did you feel? Game-changing moment in your life.
It was. It was a game-changing moment. And because I worked from that, started doing more theater in New York, and it was my first television job was through that agency. And yeah, like I said, I was with them for 9 years.
So what was the first show on TV?
It was Guiding Light. Guiding Light was the first one, and it was 3 days' work. And I had just started as a waiter at Joe Allen's, which was on Restaurant Row in the theater district. It was my first night.
At least
night.
You were not too far from the theater. Stayed in the same district.
I was in that same location where the actor studio was and everything else. And I was a finalist at the actor studio at the time. And I was working there, and my agent called me at the restaurant. They called from behind the bar, the phone there, to say that I got the part on Guiding Light. But it was only 3 days' work, so I didn't give up my waiter's job. And I did 3 days, and it went great. They loved the character. They loved the potential of it. I got another 3 days, and then they offered me a long-term contract, and the character exploded. And it was totally, for me, I was living in a rooming house by the time I got that part. I was living in a rooming house sharing a bathroom and a kitchen with 6 other people.
That's amazing.
I was 22 years old at the time. And when that happened, because the character exploded, I literally had people driving up to my house at 3 a.m. screaming my character's name up to the windows in Greenwich Village. And I had the landlord saying, this is getting kind of crazy because people are doing this regularly. I had phone calls on my answer machine. That's when we used to have answer machines from people all over the country calling in. some even from prisons, which is a little weird. But as a, but the character just really exploded. It was, then for me, it was a phenomenon.
And then that gave you the opportunity, obviously, to really expand everything you wanted to do on TV.
Yeah, I mean, I did that job for 2 years. It was a commitment that I had made at that time for myself. I was young as an actor, yeah. And I did not want to get stuck in a single role for years. I thought, this is the time of my life to take chances. Mm-hmm. Because I wasn't married, I didn't have any children, yeah. And if I wasn't working, I could always work, you know, as a bartender or do something for just sure. to sustain myself until the next job. So after that contract, it was 2 years, I made a commitment from that day on, I'm only doing this for 2 years. Towards the end of the character, the 2 years, the character had exploded so much, they literally tripled my salary to stay for one extra year, and I turned them down. And my agents were like, what are you doing? This yes. is crazy. And I said, I made a commitment to myself. I'm wow. not staying on the show for more than 2 years. This is a time of my life that I have to take chances. I moved out to LA, and in that 1 year, I started a movie of the week with Nancy McKeon from Facts of Life at the time. It was called Firefighters. I went right from that to Heartbreak Ridge with Clint Eastwood.
Yes.
I did that movie with him. I did Echoes in the Darkness, which was a Joseph Wambach miniseries. And I did LA Law, which was the big hit show at the time. That was within the first year.
So no regrets.
I had no regrets at all. But I missed the daily grind of working on a regular basis.
So
that's the truth.
But which is fascinating, and I think for all of us listening, is explain us the process of making the commitment to yourself. 2 years, and you said no more, and then right. you moved west. You didn't know if you had another opportunity.
I
you
had
just
no idea.
Went.
That's right.
That's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, at the time, like I said, it was the time of my life. I was a kid.
Yeah.
And this is the time to take chances.
And
whether
you wanted
you fall
to,
on your face or not, that's the time to take chances.
And you wanted to develop further skills yeah. within the world of acting. That was right. the idea.
True. Mm. I always wanted to continue to grow as yeah. an actor, to challenge myself, expand myself. And, you know, the opportunities were coming here and there. And there were times there were gaps, but never any time that I felt like I was struggling, even financially. I was able to live off of my acting entirely for almost 30 years, which
That's
was a
amazing.
Great thing. That was, you know, it was that you're a small percentage of people being able to do that.
That's right. They typically have to stay
yeah.
being employed as a waiter.
Right, absolutely. But I honestly, the fact is, I felt very grateful and very fortunate that the shows, the long-term shows that
yes.
I did, the daytime shows, the characters were well-written and mm-hmm. that they had great backstory that I could like sink my teeth into and develop with the writers and with the show.
So you would work as well with the writers as well in exchange?
Absolutely. Or? There were definitely instances where I saw that we could expand on the character better to make the character more attractive for the audience. All My Children was a perfect example of that because I was only hired again for 3 months on that show.
Yeah.
It was basically like a summer job. It was like a All My Children fantasy camp. Go in there for 3 months, work with the best actors on that show, have fun. And then leave, but the character, they saw the potential in the character, so did I. They offered me a long-term contract, and I had to turn it down because I was living in LA, and I moved to LA to be by my youngest daughter at the uh-huh. time, my oldest daughter. She was 6 at the time. I moved out there to be near her because we had been divided by the continent for several years while I was on a different show, and I promised her that I was only doing this for 3 months.
Wow.
When they
and
offered me the
promise.
Contract, well, that was the thing. They offered me a great contract for 3 years, and I had just had a newborn child. I had no job to go back to, and I was tempted by it for about a week. We were negotiating. Everything was great, and then I finally walked into the producer's office, and I said, I can't do this job, and they said, why? What are you talking about? I said, I made a promise to my daughter. I was going to take this job any longer than 3 months. I live 3 blocks away from her now after years of not living near her. And my agents again called me up and said, what are you doing? It's like, this seems to happen. This seems to be a theme in my life. I used to have my agents constantly call me and say, what are you doing? I said, I can't do it.
But it carries good luck.
Well, it did. And I'll tell you, this is what happened. I went back home to Los Angeles and I sat my daughter down and I said to her, listen, I just want you to know, this is what was offered to me. But I made a promise to you. And I said, and I would not break that promise. I was tempted, but I said I won't. But I also told, I said, I can't make that promise all the time to you. because I can get a job tomorrow. It could be in Chicago, it could be in Vancouver, it could be in Toronto, it could be in New York, yeah. Miami.
Oh, outside of the country.
Any outside of the country. I said, I can't, but I made that promise to you. So yeah. I stood by that promise. 5 months later, the casting director, her name is Judy Wilson, I love her, love her, love her. She contacted me and she said, how could we make this work? I said, I don't know how to do it. I don't know. And she said, my ex-wife was also an actress. She was on Santa Barbara with me years earlier. Would she be willing to do a show in New York? And I said, you know, I'm sure she probably would be. She's not doing anything right now. I said, I don't want it to be my show. Not the best environment for an ex-wife and an ex-husband to be at. I said, but well, if there's any other show, I'm just being honest. I mean, it's true. I said, if there's any other show, well, it worked out. The Guiding Light at that time, they were casting a role as a replacement. And she fit the characterization.
Really?
And they tested her in Los Angeles. They flew her to New York. She tested there, and she got the part.
Wow.
So I signed with all my children. She signed Guiding Light. I moved to New York. A week later, my daughter moved to New York. We're all living in Manhattan. And it was like God moved heaven and earth, because I fulfilled my promise.
Yeah.
And I really felt that was a blessing. It was
so
an amazing
thing. Believe in blessings as such?
Absolutely.
Were you raised with that school of thoughts?
Only by experience. I wouldn't say that it was a family trait, that my family discussed those things.
Yeah.
But I saw them in myself.
Really?
And I see certain things in my life that I feel are divine, heavenly, that are there, as I said.
For the reasons.
It felt like heaven and earth. It felt like it was moved to make something happen that almost seemed impossible.
Because this is
destiny. Because I stood firm on my promise.
Yeah.
That was it.
But do you actually, as well, Vincent, believe in destiny? That things are written? I mean, you were raised in a foreign country.
No, I wasn't. I'm sorry.
You from
your
parents.
Family, my parents. Were,
yeah.
Not my parents, my grandparents were all.
Yeah.
My grandparents, Sicily, and also my grandfather was from Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
And also my other grandmother, Ukraine. So I'm Italian. My mother's 100% Sicilian. My father is Puerto Rican, Basque, and Ukrainian. So
what a blend.
Last name, Irizarry, is actually a Basque name.
Yeah, great name. This is why we'll have passion, because
there you go.
Those are the people with a lot of passion in Basque Country.
Yeah. So, but the Basque Country actually bridges both France and
Spain,
southern France and northern Spain. That it was never a part of that with my family, as far as that with people talking about blessings or anything. But we experienced it in our lives.
But destiny, though, it was meant to happen as you came to New York. I mean. Yeah. Days later, you get a role, and boom, it becomes what it is. So things could be written sometimes.
I absolutely believe in destiny.
Yeah.
I do. I mean, I do believe in providence. I believe there are some things that, you know, I believe in being hopeful about life, and I always do that. And I try not to believe it, to live in the what ifs, but more in the what is. That's the way I like to try and live my life, even from a day-to-day basis.
Huh.
Because too many people live in the what if. What if this terrible thing happens?
That's
what
true.
If this? And they're removing themselves out of the moment to enjoy the peace, the joy, and the fulfillment of that moment because of the fear of what if.
That's right.
And I do whatever I can to avoid doing
that. And if you do what if,
I'm not perfect, but
you don't do much. And you are action oriented and you just say, let's do it.
Right. That's right.
Now, what other path do you think you were? Where destiny really played an amazing role, where you think it was meant to happen?
Well, I actually started more in music. My life, I started out at 11 years old, studying piano, classical piano, growing up as a kid. And that was the first direction my life went in. I went to music college, went to Berklee College of Music in Boston. And
one of the best ever.
Oh yeah, without question. It's probably the best jazz school in the world. And it was some of the most amazing musicians from all over the world there when I was there. And I loved it. I loved doing that. But I fell in love with, I was invited to an audition for a play in Boston at Berklee from a teacher who was an English teacher who became friends with, a man named Larry Brenner. His name is Ryland now. He had a theater company called the Pumpernickel Players. And he invited me to audition for a dramatic play. It was a Jean Genet one-act play called Death Watch. I know, have you ever heard Jean Genet as a Frenchman?
Okay. Absolutely. Yeah.
He's mostly theater. Love absurd, Jean Genet. But it was a fantastic play and a very passionate and intense play. And I auditioned for it and got the part. And it was a lead in it, in this. And it was, for me at that time, I was spending 4 to 6 hours a day in a piano room practicing just between, just me and the piano, the size of the room there.
That's what it takes.
That's right. And I became more and more unsocial. I became more withdrawn, more like within myself, because it was such an intense environment to be in. I'd be the guy in the elevator when people came in, I'd have my head down because I wouldn't want to make a connection with people. When I got the chance to do this role on stage, and it was an intense dramatic role where I go lose it and like kill some guy on stage, for me, it was cathartic. It was like, wow, I can open myself up emotionally and do this as an art, express myself. And I fell in love with it. I absolutely fell in love with it. And I started auditioning for other plays around Boston. And I kept getting work at different plays there and working also with Ryland and Brenner in plays there. I did an O'Cower play and another play. So I decided to leave music after 2 years to pursue acting.
Big decision after
it was a huge decision.
Studying for so long music and being so good, obviously.
And I was so afraid to tell my parents about it. And I didn't tell them for weeks that I was thinking about doing this. And I finally called them and they both were like, this is your life. You have to choose whatever path you feel.
That's a pretty cool answer.
It was a great answer because one of the actors that I was working with in the play, his parents were totally against that. How dare you even think about doing this? And he was wonderful too. Yeah, I think he could have been really talented as an actor, but they were flipping out. And I was, because that had precipitated my conversation with my parents. I thought, I'm definitely going to get that conversation. And when I called them, they were so accepting and loving. And they were like, you know what? This is your life. We don't want to hinder you in any way.
Well, and
you
when,
choose it.
Were you creating music as well? Or are you creating music today?
Yeah, I still play piano. I play guitar. I'm self-taught in guitar. But I went from that, and music always seemed to come back in my life. I played Paul McCartney on stage in a play called Lennon back in 1981 or 82. It was 2 years after the death of John Lennon, and it was produced by Sid Bernstein, who produced the Carnegie Hall concerts of the Beatles. He saw the play in Liverpool, they brought it to New York, and I was cast as Paul McCartney. So I got to play that. It was 40 Beatles songs, all live.
So cool.
I played not only bass, obviously, but also piano, guitar, and drums. Met George Martin, who came to one of the rehearsals because his son Gregory Martin was playing Ringo Starr in the play, and it was just an amazing experience because I grew up with the Beatles in the '60s. I know you're younger than I am, but I was living in New York City when the Beatles came to New York. When they came to JFK, I remember when that happened. I was there when they played at Shea Stadium, when they played at Carnegie Hall, when they went on the Ed Sullivan Show. Yeah. I was this 5-year-old kid watching that. So I grew up loving the Beatles. So now here I am on stage, off Broadway, playing Paul McCartney. You know,
amazing.
Yeah, it was great. So music always seemed to come back into my life, and I did. On Guiding Light, we did a music video of. It was around the time of the MTV period, and we did Out in the Streets, which was Bruce Springsteen.
Yes.
And I was the lead in that, and we sang through the streets of filming it in Weehawken
for
a few days.
Wow, a lot of things.
Yeah, it was great. So music was the first
But
love.
You were a singer as well, which is not always the case as a great pianist.
Right.
You have as well the voice. So did you always have the voice, or did you practice at the school and it was then an awakening to see?
I didn't know that I had the kind of voice that I had until I started studying with a teacher and realizing that I had the voice to do a light classical style voice, whether it was Bocelli or even some operatic.
Oh, really?
Opera as well. And I had a fantastic time doing that, but it's been years. I did produce a cabaret show with several actors from All My Children that we did at some casinos for a period of time. And I recorded some things too.
A man of all talent.
Yeah.
Beyond all those Renaissance man talent, dear friends, wine. So, Vincent, why don't you describe this wine for us? Because we decided to select Day Wines, of course, bubbles,
right,
that you could have on any of your soap, fabulous opera movies that you wish. So light and elegant.
This is absolutely light and elegant. It is. It's just really, it's accessible. Obviously the effervescence is there in the wine. And just easy drinking. This is a really nice, light, bubbly wine.
And Vincent is into French wine, so
I love
both
French wines.
Of those will be right up your Basque descent.
Yeah, I do. I love French wine. I love French, like Chablis. I prefer Chablis over California Chardonnay.
You always close your eyes when you smell the wine?
You know, I didn't even know that. Maybe I do.
Yeah.
I think I probably do.
Well, I know someone that you know well who's very good in perfume and fragrance.
Yes.
So maybe you're very well trained to use your nose for all kinds of things.
Yes. I mean, she definitely has a nose for scents. It's great. Yeah.
And you have a nose for life, too.
Absolutely. We both do.
Yeah.
That's it. I mean, I think it comes from us coming from the same location in life. We're both from the same place on Long Island. Yeah.
Yep. So now I'm going to serve you another fun bubble, because we're going to go, this was Burgundy, dear friend, JCB21.
Wow.
Chardonnay Pinot, you know, 16 months of aging. And now we're going to go to the world
of Petit Meunier.
Okay. No, just Chard and Pinot, because Burgundy doesn't need the Pinot Meunier.
Right.
250 kilometers south
okay.
of Champagne, so the richness
right.
is there. Now, haute couture for the fashion man on television.
Okay.
It's all about fashion in a sense that it's about fashioning right. your dress.
All
your
right.
haute couture dress.
I don't wear dresses, but that's okay. I'm okay with
your suit.
Yeah, wear my suit. Okay.
With the map of France. So Jen is going to catch
wear
it.
I G-strings. I'm just kidding.
Woo! Woo! In her mouth. Look at that.
Wow.
I did it. And we didn't break anything. Just that sound was only crystal falling down.
It's replaceable.
All of it.
Wow.
So, santé.
Santé.
Another bubble on a different style. Flavor, aroma. Mm. So here we've used all of France, including where your grandparents were from.
I definitely smell like biscuit in that, you know?
Yep.
Wow. That's nice.
If you were to think about a show you've done, which one would that be? Would it be maybe 90210? Because you appeared on this one as well.
Yes, I did. I played a pimp on there.
Oh!
Jean-Jacques. I played a pimp for 3 episodes.
That's a good feeling. How does it feel to play a pimp?
It was awesome. I had a great, great time playing a pimp on 90210. And I'll tell you, this is the fun part about it. The last day that I worked was when they busted me as a pimp.
Really?
And we shot it just off of Hollywood Boulevard, you know, the Boulevard of Stars, right off the side over there on a beautiful Los Angeles day, sunny day. And the scene was basically me selling coke to a narc. Okay.
So you were
that
big,
was being
with
set
additional
up.
Activities.
I was selling it, and it was being set up by the prostitute that was working for me. Okay. She set me up to it, and I'm like selling to the narc. And the second he takes the coke and I take $100 bill, all of a sudden from all corners, the police come whipping around the corner, the helicopters of people up on the rooftops with guns pointed at me. And I'm standing in the middle of the street going, what? Whoa, the $100 bill flying in my hands. I'm like, what? What? It was like, as an actor, as a young actor, getting to do that in the heart of Hollywood was a dream come true. I was like, this is freaking awesome. I'm having the best time. It's like everything around it. And I love that scene. Whenever I watch that scene, it just brings that back to me, the joy of being an actor and experiencing that fantastical moment.
Well, and that's where I was going to go. The joy of always embodying different personalities.
Sure.
I mean, is that what you love the most as far as acting as
I
well?
I do. I do love the most. And I would say that it's interesting because there's some characters that I can identify with immediately. And Lou Jack was the character on Guiding Light, was the one that was the 3-day job for that turned into a career, basically. That one I identified with so closely because it was close to my age. It's a street kid from, you know, that was basically from New York. You got that sense from him. But other characters are not, I've played doctors several times. I've never been a doctor. Okay, obviously. But there are personality traits.
Were you a good doctor?
I was a good doctor in that I was a world-renowned cardiologist.
Ooh.
I was not a good person
necessarily. And what was the name of that
show? That was All My Children.
That's
All My
right.
Children. I was not a good person necessarily because I had my nefarious deeds and I would set people up. I came on the show, basically, there was a character that I came to Pine Valley to get my girlfriend back that had left me a period of time before. And she was with another doctor. And I set him up by over-diagnosing or over-prescribing some medicine to one of his patients without his knowledge. And then when he was like coming to the brink of death, I ran in and I gave him the basically the antidote to save him. Oh, and I turned it on him.
The hero.
So, yeah, the hero. Yeah, that's such a hero. But it was a great way to introduce the character. Yeah. This character will do anything to win. And he had issues. So it was kind of that kind of thing. But I had a great time.
So what was your favorite character you've ever played?
Wow.
I know it's a tough question because you've had so many diverse roles. But, and maybe before you answer this question is maybe the most difficult to become that character, because I must imagine you receive the script.
Right.
And you ask yourself, can I be him or can I really do this? Did you face that sometimes?
I've never come to the place where I say I can't do this. There are definitely characters that I'm like, okay, I have to dig deep in here.
Yeah.
Because I honestly believe that every human being has the line of good and evil running through the heart of each of us.
Sure.
And I believe that we all have that, and it's from greater to lesser degrees. There's an extreme, whether you're, you know, Ted Bundy or, you know, or Jeffrey Dahmer, or the extreme where you're Mother Teresa. Mm-hmm. But we all have those elements in us going from one extreme to the next. Every character that I address has one of the qualities going in one direction or the other.
Yeah.
So it's a matter of identifying with each of those. But it's never, I can never be apologetic when I'm working on a character.
Yeah.
I can't apologize because somebody else might see that character and feel this is a terrible character trait, because that person doesn't see that. He's rationalized it, justified it. Every single time he acts the way he does, he has a reason why he's doing the things that he does. Whether it's distorted or, you know, profane, it doesn't matter. It is, he believes in his heart or else he wouldn't be doing it.
That's it.
And, you know, one of my favorite books of all time was Crime and Punishment, Dostoevsky. Mm-hmm. And it was a great study of conscience going from one extreme to the next, where he believed that he had the right to be what was known as a Lubermensch, in Nietzsche terms, a Superman, because he looked at other people's society, whether it was Al Capone or even it could be Napoleon or Hitler, that he looked at them, that they created their own morality.
Yes.
But he wanted to be that. So he was a student in university in Russia, and he kills this old lady that was a pawnbroker woman. He kills her. And progressively throughout the course of the book, you see that his conscience isn't allowing him to get away with that.
Yes.
And the detectives are trying to find who killed him. And the detective, it's a brilliant cat and mouse game, because the detective knows he did it. But little by little by little, to the point where he finally confesses the sin. And
that
then
he
decides
it.
That he's done it. And he pays the price for it in prison. But he's basically exonerating himself in the course of time, that he fulfilled the punishment of what it was. And he had this prostitute that he became friends with that helped him to get that place. She was a recovered prostitute that came to a place of grace and faith that told him, you have to take responsibility for this. And she was waiting for him at the end, and they both were together. It's one of my favorite books of all time. It's so brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
But I see that with people, characters that I have, that you can rationalize something at one point, but progressively, your conscience may be the thing that like imposes itself upon
absolutely.
You and forces you to look at what you did and say, what were you thinking? And you punish yourself more first before you're ultimately carried
out. Have you actually been worried taking a role that you said to yourself, people are going to perceive me as that doctor, devious doctor, or that character, and it's going to change the way they perceive me as Vincent?
It happens. Yeah, it does happen to me.
Because I imagine.
I got to be honest with you. When I was David Hayward.
Torturous, right?
He did some real nefarious things. He just did some crazy things. And I was in New Jersey, and I was asked to participate in a Christmas show in New Jersey. It was actually a local church that was there. They were doing this Christmas show. And I said, sure, I'll participate in it. And the guy that was running lights in the show, he said to me, he goes, my mother was so upset that you were in this show. And I said, why? She can't imagine why you would be allowed to be in this show because of your character. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, well, you tell your mother, I don't go home every night and get on my knees to ask God to forgive the acts of my character. It's not me. This is a character.
That's right.
And I don't understand when people have that belief or that feeling, I don't understand how they don't see that every show, every movie, every book they read has an antagonist and a protagonist.
Yes.
It's always a fight between good and evil. That's what the stories
are about. Always.
And I'm like, so do you honestly think, and I'm there with my kids, I have children, they're there at the show, and she can't understand that that's not me?
Well, and it's, you know, it's what do you think, and it's very well explained, what do you think about some characters that you know very well? Great actors, they're always the villain, always the drug dealer, always, you know, the godfather, always in that, whereas some others are always portrayed as the good one. So what's your view of that? Because you could say, after seeing an actor that way, doing seven roles in the same area, maybe he's like that. That's why he acts it so well.
Or he just has been, he's able to do that in a way that they like.
That's right.
I personally prefer having characters that are not necessarily the goody two-shoes.
Yes.
Because those are the more complex characters that I appreciate.
Yes.
And I have played the other. And you always find things that you can enjoy. But those other ones seem to spark excitement more, you know, from the viewing audience. And because it's constantly testing all the other characters as well as yourself.
Yes.
And I love it when they write in such a way that it's complex enough that the character, as I said before, has at least a conscience at times questions himself.
That's it.
And I love
that. So when that happens, you say yes, because there's that moment of life.
Yeah. So I guess I might be in that category where I get to play more of those characters because people seem to like what I do when I do that.
Well, it's a great philosophy. You've explained it so well. Now, is there any role that you haven't done that you absolutely want to do now? After 40 years of incredible acting.
You know, I would say when I was a young actor, I probably worked on the role of Hamlet more than any role that I had ever not done. I worked on it in acting classes constantly with other actresses sometimes or other actors and put together scenes.
Yes.
But I think I'm a little long in the tooth now because Hamlet being my age, it's probably it's too late for that.
Why would it be too late?
Well, because he was a young boy. Well, his mother was
just
Gertrude.
A matter of, you know,
Gertrude was of a young
the
mother of like
hair,
in mid-30s at the time. You know, she probably had him when she was like 14, 15 years old, and he was a teenager at the time. So, but that was a role that I would have loved to have performed.
And very challenging.
I love those soliloquies. I love them. They were absolutely brilliant. I love Shakespeare. So I would say I'd love to be able to do more theater.
Theater, yeah.
I did theater for so many years, and that was my first love as an actor.
Yeah.
And since I started television, I haven't had the opportunity to do as much.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, not necessarily a role, but also, but the medium, I would prefer to be able to get back on.
Is it harder to do theater?
It's a different discipline.
Yeah.
It's not harder. It's actually, in some ways, it's not harder because there's a clear beginning, middle, and end to that story.
Yes.
Whereas you're working on a soap or other, like a long-term series, you have a beginning and a long middle, and you don't know what the end's in sight, and you don't even know what's in the middle until it comes. This, you have it right before you. But what I love about the discipline of theater, it's that it's immediate.
Mm-hmm.
You're on stage. The audience is there. Everybody's... It's an experience everybody's experiencing together.
Yeah.
And when it's done, you've shared that experience with them. They've shared the experience back with you. And I just love it. I love the development of a character. And I think that was from my first play that I ever did. I just love the magic of breathing life into words.
Yeah.
You know, and
absolutely
creating the pathology of a character, understanding it.
Now, as we're going to get very serious with a passionate, luminous, charismatic red wine, Vincent,
okay.
There's always one thing in theater.
All right, so the disclosure, just so that everybody understands this. We've been together for hours now, okay? We've been wining and dining for hours. I blended wines earlier for like a good hour and a half.
Amazing.
We had a great time, but this is so, just so you know.
And now we have more wines.
It's not like I just walked in here, all right? Just so that we're very clear about this. And I'm enjoying these wines. I've had your wines. And I just want to say that because over the last few months especially, I've been drinking quite a lot of your wines. Mm-hmm. From Raymond and Deloche and also Buena Vista.
Thank you.
Even a Chateauneuf de Pape that you have.
Of course.
That was absolutely amazing. They've been fantastic wines. And what I love about your wines is that they're always so well balanced.
Oh, thank you.
Between the acidity, between the tannins, between the fruits. There really is an elegance to your wines. And I especially love that.
Coming from the man himself. I'm going to have another toast to this.
There you go. Absolutely.
Because we're going to talk about your life of wine now.
Okay. Fantastic.
But before we get there, I had one more question, which always, having done theater as a young boy in French school, this is an obligation and this is so much fun.
Yeah.
But I admire when you mention Shakespeare and from the words to the memory you need to have. Yeah. How do you practice this memory? How do you, that muscle that is so important to remember, you know, 2 or 3 hours of plays?
You know, I've never had an issue with
really? You read and you remember.
Well, there's some repetition that's necessary. You have to do it. And I actually learned that from a very early age studying classical piano, because I had the ability to sight read like a Chopin waltz for like 4 or 5 times and then put it away and not look at the music anymore.
Yeah.
And I knew that from a very early time that I had a very good memory, okay? Mm-hmm. At least for visuals. So I'm not good. Somebody tells me their name. It's better if I see it in writing because I could meet them like 10 minutes later and I can't remember the name because I didn't see it. It's a visual thing for me.
I see.
So that happens with me with music, and it happens also with scripts.
Okay.
That's always been a thing for me. And I know that some people struggle, even because I've worked with actors where you're constantly doing take after take because they can't remember their lines.
It must be quite frustrating when your part is phenomenal and you have to do it again.
Yeah, there are definitely times when you have the monologue and you're like in the middle of your monologue and they have one line and they can't come up with them. Like, you freaking kidding me? It's tough. That can be
so
hard.
So you suggest a little glass of passion. Is wine helping for memory?
I don't know. It depends on how much I'm drinking.
So
what time of night it is. I don't know.
Well, we're going to come back to the acting life for a sec, but you are so knowledgeable about wine. How come?
The timing of it was perfect. I became second level sommelier with WSET.
Yes.
Is what I did. And
so impressive.
And at that time, I was introduced to a distribution company out of San Francisco that represented about 1,000 wines that were produced globally. And it was the perfect education for me, because going from that second level to experiencing varietals that I never even heard of from, I mean, of course, we had the varietals from France and Italy. And certainly California, but then to have Greek varietals and Croatian and Slovenian, and certainly Argentinian and Chilean and New Zealand.
The world is a complex place.
Yeah, South African, the Chenin Blancs, and all that. It was I did that for about 3 years. I was selling their wines to
restaurants. And you decided to stop acting for a while, or you were doing both?
No, I was doing both. I did that. Right. I was doing that.
Because you were passionate about wine. That was the goal.
I love wine. It's interesting because, especially tasting these varietals from places around the world that I would never have heard of, you know, whether it's like Blaufränkisch.
So education attracts you. I mean, knowledge attracts you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Like a Certico. Most people, they're understanding Greek wines. They're really amazing wines, some of them from there. A Certico is fantastic. It's a delicious white wine.
I'm with you.
And that's just those. I mean, but obviously, the ones from I love Rhone, the Rhone Valley.
Yeah,
wines.
You're big on the Rhone. And that's maybe your DNA coming from the Southwest. Maybe
it could
there's
be.
A little bit of that.
It could be.
But now, thanks to Donna Ebert, we had the pleasure to meet.
Yes.
And you love wine to the point that you want to promote wine as well.
Absolutely.
Which is fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I was working with the distribution company for a few years. But especially after tasting your wines, I think they're so spectacular. And I want to be able to give the opportunity to be.
Well, we're delighted we have the best actor who, dear friends, and you're going to tell us all about it, won an Emmy Awards.
Right.
So tell us. I mean, this is a huge deal. This is like getting 100 points on a wine and much more.
Yeah, no, yes, I did win an Emmy Award for the role on David Hayward on All My Children.
That's a huge deal.
I was nominated twice for that character and twice for two other characters. So it's been a four-time nominee. And yeah, it was exciting to win. It was fun. Well, after all these years of working on all these shows. Yeah, it was really great.
What a gratification after so many years of great, phenomenal performance. Now you have the Emmy. Mm-hmm. So what does it make you feel, and how does... Do you take an award? Does it motivate you? Does it pushes you to do something else within the world of acting?
You know, it's, I guess it's kind of like the icing on the cake.
Yes.
When you get it. But the one thing about acting, I would prefer to be in producing, frankly.
Really?
To be able to get...
On the other side of the camera.
I would prefer to get product that I can produce, you know, even developing something from its embryonic stage to the point of getting it on film. And the reason why is because as an actor, I feel like I'm just a single cog in the wheel.
Yeah.
I'm basically beholden to what's handed to me from the script, from the directors, from the producers.
And you have to stay within that boundary.
And of course, I may be a bigger cog than others if you're a lead in something, so you carry it. But I really would love a bigger voice.
Yes.
And being able to share something that really touches my heart. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily something that I found my way into because I got a part and found my imagination, using my imagination, my creativity to create that part.
I see.
Something that excites me about a story.
And you have some ideas now?
I have. I've had several throughout my career that I've optioned the rights to some roles, trying to get off the ground. I've worked as in development with stories. So we'll see. That's what we're more.
We know there's secret news.
Yeah.
On JCB Live, sometimes we have new announcements. So I know it's coming.
Yeah. So I'm doing that. And also, I think you know that I also do real estate as well.
That's right.
So I've been selling real estate for several years now, for about 5-6 years.
And you love it? You love the deal.
I love it because I love it. It's like me introducing people to their dream home, you know, or people a transition from their life of one home to another. That's exciting to me when it's concluded and everything's done. And it was interesting because before I even knew you, I sold a home last year in Calabasas, a beautiful home, wonderful people. Yes. They were my clients.
Great area, Calabasas. Property.
And I bought them some really beautiful wine glasses and a decanter from Tiffany's. And I bought them there. I wanted to give them a nice bottle of wine. I gave the Raymond 40th anniversary cap. That was with the red velvet that was there. I gave that as a gift. And that was before I knew you. And that was like... And they were so excited about that. And it was an amazing bottle of wine.
Well, it's destiny.
Yeah,
it is destiny. I'm going to drink to that.
There you go.
So what, you know, I think it's an interesting question for everybody to hear. I know we always drink when we cheer and look at each other in the eyes. If not, it's 7 years of something which is not good to inherit.
Okay.
You know what it is? 7 years of bad sex, I can say it. None of us want that.
I don't want bad sex with you, man. I'm being honest with you right now. Even the thought of it sounds like bad to me. I'm sorry. Nothing against you personally. But
didn't have anything to do with us. It had everything to do with our friends here.
Yeah. No, I would never have bad sex with who I'm with. That's all.
So, on that note.
Yes, on that note.
What drives you? What motivates you? Because you keep always searching for more and unique and different avenues from acting, music, acting, real estate, wine, and you still obviously do acting. What drives you, and at the same time, what is your passion?
You know, I can honestly say from my youngest age, I've always had a joie de vivre.
Yes.
You know, do you know what that means?
No, but can you help us? Yes.
I always had that.
Joie de vivre.
Joie de vivre.
Oh, here we go.
Okay.
Show me the way.
All right.
Takes an actor to show me how to pronounce a French word.
That's right. Okay. It's interesting. I've always had that about, because I always saw it's a huge, beautiful world out there. And there's so many experiences. And I've always been an adventurous person in my life. Always, from my earliest days. And I attribute it to that sense of internally, that inherently, that I was wanted to be, I want to experience life. I want to experience it in the full. And
you want to see joy
leads
in
me
others.
In those directions. Absolutely. Yeah. And it sometimes leads me in directions that I never imagined that I might do.
Sure.
And that's basically, I would say, at
I mean, I see wine totally a gift for you and a given because of your personality. You explain real estate very well, saying, I saw those people very happy to imagine them in their dream house. And I think that's so well said.
Yeah, because obviously with wine in vino veritas, the Latin say, and wine
translation,
is truth.
In wine there's truth.
Yes.
And or in truth is wine.
Truth is wine.
We
okay.
can look at it in Latin both ways.
Okay, that's true. They do invert things there in this Latin language, the Italian language. That's true. I've always been excited to just expand my horizons.
Yes.
Intellectually, creatively, just experientially. Those are the things in my life, because, you know, all of us are kind of finite in the world that we live
and
in.
Sadly, right we are.
Yeah. I mean,
we may live forever. I think passion will help you to live at least 20 years younger.
I think you're right about that. That's true. Or at least give me a good boost tonight when I'm alone with somebody special.
Yeah, that's right. And she's right here.
And she is.
Just to make a story
to that.
And she's a perfume nose. Mm-hmm. So she has the talent of senses.
She absolutely
and
does.
And smelling you in everywhere you are. He smells good still.
That's
just
right.
To let you know,
even though I was told tonight not to wear, today I was not supposed to wear cologne because we were blending wines. So they said it could affect the way that you taste the wine. So I don't smell as good as I would.
I
should have brought it, but that's okay.
We'll give you a little JCB 13.
Okay, I'll take it. Okay.
Well, maybe you can pass it to us so we could smell it shortly.
Oh, I would love it. That's
but
awesome.
Now, what is your dream, or the dream that you haven't yet accomplished?
That's an interesting question. What's the dream that I haven't yet accomplished?
Maybe I'll put some of them if you like it.
Let me see.
Can you believe that this fragrance, was based out of the wine cellar originally of Burgundy?
Wow.
So Vincent, you know, the smell of a wine cellar, 17th, 18th century in France is amazing. You know, you have that smell of the oak, of really the cobwebs, and that beautiful, humid smell that really is so inviting in many ways. And then the wine. So we took really the oak barrels and we created a molecule out of it.
Yeah.
We took the pits of the berry and the skin and we created three molecules that we then synthesized with rosewood, a little bit of sandalwood, and other phenomenal component. We won't divulge our secret.
Yeah.
And here it is, number 13.
Well, Yvonne knows that sandalwood is one of my favorite scents, and I sent that.
You feel it, huh?
It definitely is. It's beautiful. I didn't say to you, Jean-Charles, your packaging, whether it's in your perfumes or whether it's in your wine,
thank you so much,
is exceptional, extraordinary.
Well, it's made.
And I can't tell you, every time I open a bottle of wine that I'm sharing with others because I want them to taste it with me, that they all comment about the packaging. The wines are spectacular.
Well, now it's all yours. Really, you're the ambassador.
I'm so
honored that you
so
chose
them, because they really are they're celebratory, and they're also. They're like, you can save them, you know, they're for you. That's like fantastic.
Well, and I love to save that
I
bottle.
I save that one. I have flowers.
Well, here we go. Mm-hmm. We have flowers in passion. It's vibrant, it's sensual, and it's alluring.
Yeah.
And it is debonair.
So that's a cab, and it's a blend.
Yeah, you're going to guess
blend.
It.
It's
I know you will.
A cab, and I know you have Petit Verdot in there.
That's right.
And what else? There's something else in there. What is it?
There's Cab, Petit Verdot, and what you love in the Loire Valley.
Oh, okay. So it's Pinot Noir.
Cab Franc.
Oh, Cab Franc. Yeah. Okay, because that's also...
Yeah, there's two. You're right. There's great Pinot as well in the Loire, but...
Okay.
That's a very interesting wine, and we really wanted to create a Bordeaux blend without going the full way. So it's a Napa blend, in a sense, because of Cab Franc. We could have had it, obviously, Malbec, and eventually Merlot, but it didn't work. Here we wanted some sensuality, some vibrance to the wine.
Interesting that you bring up Malbec. A lot of people don't realize this, but Argentina, They took the Malbec wine, the grape, okay? They basically took it from France.
And for where your family's from?
Cahors, right? Yeah. Cahors, France. And that, they were creating Malbec wines back in the 16th, 17th century.
That's right.
And they basically took it and it became their number one exported wine out of Argentina. But it's
You could be successful if you take something from the French. I sell my hair lately, so if you want some, in all colors it comes.
Well, I think I have more to give, but I'll see that.
Yeah, I think so too.
I could do it in different colors too if you want.
I'm going to steal some from him today.
There you go.
So tell us,
yeah,
last few questions, because I know we're keeping you, but we're having such a fun time.
We're having a great time. It's been an amazing day.
Well, your dream, you know, you've got a great family, four kids.
Yes, I have four children.
Great, great kids from what I understand.
Fantastic.
Yeah, unbelievable career you've had.
Yeah.
I mean, amazing lifespan, and you get to do what you love to do.
Yeah.
What else would you like to share that you haven't yet done you wish to do?
Wow, that's a tough question.
Besides making wine, which you just did today.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. You know, I've written songs over the years,
yes,
and I would love to be able to at least sell some of my songs.
I was hoping you were going to go there, because I could see in you, sitting next to you, that in music, there's still something that vibrates in you that you want to achieve.
It's not only music, it's poetry. I love poetry, and I was... When I was 20 years old, I fell in love with the poetry of John Keats and Byron and Shelley. And so I've always gravitated toward the romantic, whether it's in music, whether it's late Beethoven, Chopin.
Is that the French in you?
It could be.
I got to tell you, just not to interrupt you because I just did, we are exactly the same.
Really?
From the poets to the musician you just mentioned,
my
favorites.
Yeah. I always grew up playing piano. I gravitated to those pieces that were written by Chopin or by because Beethoven, he straddled both classical and romantic periods.
That's right.
And his romantic songs, like Moonlight Sonata, is a perfect example.
Yeah.
And I got to perform that live on Days of Our Lives years ago. It was great. But I also
can you believe
like
from
Eric
someone
Satie.
Who couldn't hear?
That's right.
I mean
he lost
amazing.
His hearing. Especially in the Ninth Symphony, he was completely deaf.
And he created it.
And it's
one
of the most
insanity.
Powerful symphonies of all time. But then it went on to, for me, I love Eric Satie, I like Debussy. Yeah. I love those type of pieces. So it's the same thing for me, whether in poetry, I always gravitate towards romantic poets.
Yeah.
And so when I write lyrics, I try to write in a poetic style in that way. So I'd love to be able to, you know,
very cool.
Sell some of my pieces, my lyrics.
And you write every day? You inspiration?
I don't write
comes.
Every day. My life is so varied. I've got other things going on between the real estate and the wines and, you know, acting and all the other stuff that's going on. But when I get inspired, I could literally be like, I could be walking down the street and all of a sudden something comes to my mind, to my heart, and I start riffing on that.
That's amazing.
It could be a line, a lyric, or I'm thinking of someone or something, and something comes to my mind. It could be just a hook that I start developing.
You're right.
I grab my phone sometimes and I'll record what I'm doing.
That's
and
great.
I'll do that. And that's what I go with.
And producing a record or a series of music interests you as well, with piano and all the instruments you play?
It would be more me giving them to other musicians for them to do. That I would lend them my lyrics, my writing.
Because next time together, we're going to do a winemaker dinner, dear friends. Together, you could be in your house or you could be here at Raymond, because we have pianos everywhere. Mm-hmm. And you play the piano, you sing, and we cheers together and talk about wine. What about that?
Well, thankfully, it's not today. After this long day that we've had of wining and dining, after all this time. But this has been awesome.
Oh,
Charles,
well, one
so
last
much.
Question, Vincent, because I really believe, knowing your curriculum vitae, which is insanely fascinating, from, you know, literally sharing an apartment with six people in New York, being a waiter in a restaurant, all the way to doing what you've done, to real estate, to wine, to being a great father, obviously, and, you know, such a great human being. What message would you like to send to all our friends watching as an artist and an entrepreneur, because very rarely you combine the creativity side of your brain and obviously the business side of it.
I would say more than anything, just be kind to one another. You know, this is, we're living in really difficult times right now and very challenging times. And your kindness might inspire another person to get to the next day. That's, I think, is most important. I really do. I think that we're all in this together, and I don't say that in a surface way. We are. We're literally living side by side with each other every single day.
Yes.
And unfortunately, I have family members that weren't able to succeed to get to that next place. And it's very important. Just be kind to one another and remind each other how important they are to you in your lives. I think that's more important than anything.
Beautifully said. And even though he's a great actor, I'm next to him. I feel the vibration that he means every word of it.
Absolutely.
Well, Vincent, cheers. To your...
In vino veritas.
In vino veritas.
In veritas in vino.
And carpe diem to all of us.
Merci, monsieur.
To enjoy wine,
acting,
music, others. Vincent, to your continued success.
Thank you, folks. Thank you.